Blog Talk Radio.
It's the book everybody's talking about. Acclaimed author Clark Garrison lays it all on the line in his new book on how to survive the next 365 with real-life accounts of success and failure. And it's not only Clark Garrison's story, but it's yours as well. Order your book today at survivethenext365.com. And now, tune in bi-weekly to find out how you can discover the unique journey that you possess, along with the greatness in you. Join author Clark Garrison on Blog Talk Radio bi-weekly to help you figure out your personal blueprint on surviving the next 365. Learn the art of believing in the power within you with Clark Garrison. It's the hottest book on the planet, How to Survive the Next 365 by Clark Garrison. Order your book online now at survivethenext365.com or call 866-642-9125 and tell them to rush your order by author Clark Garrison on How to Survive the Next 365.
Bring it on. I like that bit. Check it out.
Yo, good evening. And welcome to the show. You are listening to BTR, The Conversation, coming to you live from Hotlanta, U.S. of A. The program you're listening to is designed to give you a dose of positive energy and to garner insights from our esteemed guests. Hey, listen, if you are listening via the internet and you'd like to ask any of our guests tonight any questions, the dial-in number is 917-932-1078. Be sure to hit the number one button, if you would. I'll see your hand raised. I don't know if you heard, but tonight our featured guest is none other than Miss Melissa Brathwaite, coming to you live. She just did a book recently, 8 Steps to a New You. First, we got friend of the show, Coach Tanya Kilpatrick, who's going to come in and continue to break down the ever-elusive 48 Laws of Power by Brother Robert Greene. So that's what we got coming up. But first, you know, I had to do a little commentary about recent issues we got going on with the HAMP program. And HAMP program is the Home Affordable Modification Program that was started in, I think, 2009 by our president, Obama. And recently, the House voted in a bill to get rid of the much maligned program. Now, if you hadn't heard, or if you, many of you have been victims of this housing crash we've been going through now for, what, 2-3 years now. And what the president was trying to do in this program is to help homeowners through the goodwill of the banks modify loans to make them affordable. Now, originally it was hoped that 3 to 4 million homeowners would receive aid, but to date, less than 600,000 homeowners have actually gotten any help at all, and in many cases, those have been reneged. Now, I know this because my company used to work with homeowners to get them loan modifications. And I tell you without a shadow of a doubt, I promise you that system was a joke. Very rarely worked. Maybe 2 out of 10 people would even get their documentations completed so they can be judged or deemed worthy. And out of those 2 that made it, 1 of them would be canceled mysteriously because they just didn't want to do it. See, the problem is, and will always be, the banks. They don't want to help homeowners, and the government either can't or won't force them to do so. The banks were offered this program and would receive incentives if they used it, but they were under no such mandate to do so. We will not affect relief for any of us Americans until the taxpayers, and that's us, by the way, who bailed out the banks, go after the banks. We spent this entire election demanding, and I'm talking about the mid-season election, that the Republicans get back in office because politicians and lobbyists created the illusion that if they did, life would go back to normal. I wonder what happened to the Americans that could not and would not be so easily distracted in past years. We have let the golden goose off the ropes, and I fear it may be too late for us to do anything about it now. But you know what? Great job, voters. You rock. Now, let's move on. I just wanted to get that off my chest. Without further ado, we're going to welcome to the show, I'm going to give her this moniker, Queen of Developing a Higher Mindset. That ain't too bad, right? So please welcome to the show, without further ado, Coach T.K. Kilpatrick. Coach, are you there?
Yes, Clark, I am here.
Yeah, you know I have a low tolerance for the banking institution, so I just had to get that off my chest, T.K.
Well, I'm glad you did.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we had a little technical difficulty earlier. I don't know if I was talking in the mic, out of the mic. I don't know if anybody heard the intro. We'll figure that out on the playback. But we're back. We're live now. And listen, you know, you've been systematically breaking down the 48 laws of power. I know we're going to go through all 48 before long, from obviously the book of Brother Robert Greene. Tell us, what's today's lesson going to be about?
Well, today's lesson, Clark, is going to cover law number 5. And law number 5 talks about the importance of reputation. That's what we're covering today.
The that good old thing called reputation, your rep, something that my father always said, you can you only get one.
Right.
You only get it once.
So if you want me to, I can go ahead and get right into it.
Oh, yes, ma'am. The floor is yours, and I have my notepad out as usual.
Well, thank you so much. You're so gracious. Law number five, Clark, is actually one of the laws that we can learn about perception being reality. Because when it comes down to our reputation, if someone perceives you in a certain way, say, for example, maybe you're arrogant or they're perceiving you as being arrogant or boring or conceited, and if you do nothing to counteract that perception, what happens is it ultimately becomes a reality or the truth about you as an individual. So law number five, actually, one of the things that we can learn from this law is that perception is a reality. And the law states that so much depends on reputation that we should guard it with our life. It says, reputation is the cornerstone of power. Remember, we're talking about power. Through your reputation, you can intimidate and win. However, once it slips, you are then vulnerable and will be attacked on all sides. So we're admonished to make our reputations unassailable and to always be alert to potential attacks and to thwart them before they happen. Now, this is about protecting your reputation. Now, it also has another piece to that, and we see it a lot of times in politics, where the part B to this law says, destroy your enemies by opening holes in their reputation. Then stand aside and let public opinion hang them. Now, we see politicians use this a lot. And a
Absolutely.
Lot of these laws we're looking at, when we're looking at these laws, we can see politics played out in these 48 laws of power, if you think about it. And so the law covers a couple characters that I want to highlight. One of the characters who actually stood on his reputation was a general during China, a war they were having. His name was General Yang. And he was able to actually fool one of his rivals, who was named Sima Yi, by actually letting his track record for being an undefeated leader in battle do the work for him. And what he did was, at one particular time, his troops became outnumbered by his rival, Sima Yi. However, he had a track record and a reputation for being an undefeated leader. So when Sima Yi began to march upon him to actually do battle, this gentleman devised a plan, and his plan was simply to play crazy. That's how he did it. His plan was just to play insane. And what he did was he put on this robe, went up on a building, if you will, and sat up there with his robe on and an instrument. And he played this instrument in an effort, looking like he was up there praying, right? Well, when his enemy was coming to attack, the enemy spotted him on this building. Now, remember, he has a track record for being an undefeated leader and one who plays tricks on his enemy. And so when the enemy was coming to attack and saw him on the building, appearing to be insane or either having a trick up his sleeve, the enemy turned around and did not attack, although Lang was vulnerable at this particular moment. But
wow.
The enemy did not know that. His reputation actually preceded him and fought for him without him even going into battle. So sometimes this is an example of how your reputation can actually precede you. And this law actually talks about how your reputation can protect you without you even being present. Now, there's also another gentleman, Mr. Barnum, P.T. Barnum. He was an expert at poking holes in his rival's reputation. He would write letters. He would warn the public about buying his opponent's stock. He was a master at poking mockery at the tactics of his rival, and he usually succeeded in doing so. And what I want to say is, in this time, in 2011, with the onset of technology like Facebook and Twitter and email and all these other social media venues, we really need to guard our reputation and make a conscious effort, Clark, to control perceptions. We really have to, you know, make sure we protect that, because think about Facebook. You can, you know, I always say you can be whoever you want to be on Facebook. We have coaches being born every day. We have
every day.
Every day there's a new transformational coach. Every day there are people who create these personas online. But that's the beauty of technology right now in the time that we live in. The only requirement, once you create that persona and you create that perception and you have that perception and people thinking that's a reality in terms of who you really are, your only goal then is to live up to that persona and deliver
right.
the results. Now, when you're able to do that and use technology to your advantage, because that's where we are now, we can use it to catapult us in a way that we've never been able to do before. And so when we're able to do that, all we have to do then is deliver the results. And once we deliver the results, that reputation that we've created becomes our reality. And our reputation then spreads like wildfire, because the more value you're creating for people, people are going to begin to talk about you, and word of mouth is the best marketing that one can do in terms of self-branding and getting your name out there and building a solid reputation.
Mm. Wow.
Does that make sense?
That makes sense. It does. Technology certainly has been an equalizer in what would have taken years and years
Absolutely.
Of lobbying and performing and doing. Now one can set up a Facebook page and within a week, you know, be the highlight of the, as you would say, the coaching world,
or a CEO or what have you. And I'm not saying there is anything wrong with that. I'm just saying it's very, very easy now to create a reputation. But remember, a good reputation empowers you, because it diminishes those who attempt to harm your reputation. So say, for example, when you have a good reputation, it actually goes to work for you, and it will fight those battles for you when people may say, well, he's not that great, or I don't know much about him, but that reputation is going to withstand. And so it adds power to who you are in your absence. Now, on the contrary, if something has happened and you may have some credibility issues and your reputation has been tarnished, this law also talks about borrowing the reputation of other people. So we can actually borrow other people's reputation. Well, how do you do that? Well, you borrow other people's reputation by associating yourselves with them. That's how you borrow other people's reputation to build your credibility. Now, you have to be very careful with this, because there's a saying, my mom used to say this all the time, birds of a feather flock together. So it can work for you or it can work against you. You just have to be careful who you associate yourself with.
Right, right.
So, but when you're associating yourself with an individual and borrowing their credibility, just be quiet. Just be quiet, and your silence will allow you to be validated by those that you are around that have the reputation for something you may be lacking. That's very, very powerful.
You know, you see that on Facebook a lot as well, especially when people are more prone to, you know, take pictures with maybe folks who are a little more well-known, and it gives you the indication that they are great friends or they have some kind of liaison or that they're in the same, I guess you would say, stratosphere.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Economical and social status as
mm-hmm.
the person in the picture with them. So you'll see on Facebook, you know, these women or men that have taken like 1,000 pictures with every star they can find.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you mean when you say in a sort they're borrowing on the reputation of others?
Exactly. And one of the things in the particular industry, multi-level marketing, one of the things, a technique that's utilized in terms of leads is you borrow the credibility of an individual and you borrow the relationship of an individual. You marry the two together and you close your lead. So, yes, that's a classic example of borrowing credibility. And once you
wow.
borrow that credibility, you can build your reputation because association brings about assimilation. So when you're borrowing that credibility and you're associating yourself with that individual, most times people think if you're with that person, you're like that person. So you may be that person junior. You know, that person has a solid reputation for whatever quality that is, be it network marketing or being successful in business endeavors or real estate or whatever that may be. If you're associated with that individual, then it's going to be perceived that you're just like that individual, which makes you more powerful. It increases your power. So the bottom line is reputation is everything, you know, and at the end of the day, it's about long-term growth and credibility. And what I want to say is in this time that we live now, we can actually shape the perception of people with Facebook, which is a perfect example. And if your listeners, if we're not setting the tone of that conversation, you're giving up your power.
Right.
This is a classic example where you can shape who you are. And if you're not doing it, you're missing an opportunity to gain power. You're allowing the media, the mass media, to do it for you. So develop your own personal speech to tell people, you know, in a nutshell, about who you are and what you do. Now, the key is to do it subtly. You know, you don't want to sound the alarm because it's going to have the opposite effect. So this chapter also talks about telling about who you are, but doing it in a subtle manner, whereas it's an elevator speech, it gets to the point and it's solid, but you must tell your own story and not allow others to create your reputation for you. That's very, very important. Now, one of the things in terms of reputation, this law also talks about Casanova. Now, Casanova was known for being a great seducer. That's his reputation. You know, he was Casanova, and I think maybe some guys coming up, they wanted to be like Casanova because of his reputation.
Yeah. I know a few myself.
So Casanova actually used his reputation to conquer women. He used it. Now, was he a great seducer? We don't know. But he had the reputation of being one. So getting women... Get this now, was easy for Casanova because his reputation preceded him and the women were curious and wanted to know for themselves what made him so romantically successful. That's powerful. Because he didn't even have to go out. He didn't have to hunt. They
wow.
came looking for him because of his reputation. That's how powerful our reputation is. So the saying that it precedes us, it really does. Good, bad, or ugly, it's going to precede us. Now, you can also, I know I talked about Part B where it talks about poking holes in your enemy's reputation. Now, Thomas Edison used that tactic, and the law talks about how he did it, and I personally feel he went too far. I wouldn't say it's a reversal of the law, but I would say Robert Greene didn't call this a transgression, but I'd call it a transgression. And what happened, Thomas Edison began to rival with a gentleman named Nikola Tesla. Now, Thomas Edison was a proponent of the DC current, okay, the direct current. Nikola actually created the AC current. Well, Thomas began to poke holes in Tesla's current, saying his wasn't effective. And he went so far to poke holes in Tesla's reputation, he almost had the popular opinion that it didn't work. Now, Thomas Edison began to electrocute animals with the AC current to prove that it was no good. Now, when he took it a step further, he got the New York State Prison, this is in our history book, to organize the first electrocution with AC current. Now, the reason I say this was a transgression because when they did it, the charge, the AC current, because he wanted to prove a point that the AC current, you know, was not a good current. Now,
right. The
charge, when they did it to electrocute this man, the charge was too weak, and the man was half killed.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Edison went too far. And what he did was, when he was trying to damage Tesla's reputation, he did more damage to his own reputation. So Robert Greene tells us a strategy in terms of poking holes in your enemy or your rival, because you can't go too far. If you go too far, it's going to shine the spotlight on you. So it must be in a subtle manner, sort of like P.T. Barnum did when he poked mockery and ridicule, but, you know, did it all in jest. So you have to be very careful. So we have to be careful when we're poking holes or talking about other people's reputation. And because when you're saying things negatively about another, it's usually going to cause the spotlight to reflect back upon you. So you have to be very careful with Part B of that law. Poking holes in other people's reputation because it can backfire, like it did on Thomas Edison. So he had a lot of work to do to try to regain his reputation. So it's very, very interesting. Very interesting.
You know, here's what I want you to talk about a little bit, TK, before you get out of here. And again, excellent job on breaking down law number 5 and making it relevant to today. But I want people to understand who have read it, didn't get it, because, you know, a lot of people read Robert Greene's book and just don't get it. You know, it's teaching either outdated information that is not applicable to today, or they feel it is a bit too harsh. So what I want you to just, if you could explain or kind of elaborate on, is how, even though a lot of this is in the 17th and 18th century that he talks about, it's all relevant to today.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's think about it. Let me just say this. All writing was written for our learning. All writing. History was written for our learning. What I like about the 48 Laws of Power, what Robert Greene does is, because it may be a concept that's difficult to grasp, he's taken real people and real activities and placed them in a book for us to learn lessons from and make them practical to our lives. Now, so the book is not written in abstract. It's not theory. It's practical because these are things that actually happen in the 17th and 18th century, and these are people. They're not Martians. They're not aliens. These are real people, human beings, just like you and I, who actually gone through what Robert Greene is sharing with us. And so, again, history was written for our learning. When you think, look at this book, and I want to talk about the different people who read it. And, yes, it can be harsh, and it may be perceived as being harsh, but in reality, you may not be that harsh person, but you will encounter harsh people.
Right.
And with that, you need to know how to deal with harsh people. You can't bury your head in the sand and act as if we're in this utopia, United States of America, or worldwide. Because there are people who have bad motives and bad intentions. And what this book does, it shines the light on those actions and show us how to circumvent, how to thwart, and how to handle those types of situations that we're going to encounter at some point in our life. You know, the old people say, if you haven't had any rain in your life, wait a while. You're going to encounter some people who don't mean you well. That's just a factor of life. And so this book is designed to actually not to change you or to change your personality or the persona of who you are, but again, like I always say, it's to enable you to play the game and win. That's the purpose of the 48 Laws of Power, and that's the approach that you must take when reading this. Now, there's a gentleman in prison, and 48 Laws of Power, he was actually on death row, and he had 48 Laws of Power in his library. He was a gang member, notorious gang member, a leader of a gang. And believe it or not, the lawyers actually confiscated the 48 Laws of Power out of his cell and presented it to the jury and told the jury he should die because he's smart.
Wow.
Based on his reading material. A notorious thug. But he's being acclaimed as being smart because of what he reads.
Wow.
You know, yes, he's done some things. He's killed some people. But he is a survival guide. At the end of the day, it's a survival guide. You think about Colin Powell, who's read the 48 Laws of Power, Obama. Condoleezza Rice, my hero, my shero, she's read the 48 Laws of Power. George Bush, probably the entire Bush family, have read the 48 Laws of Power. And that's why I wanted to point out a lot of politics, you can see it actually played out in the 48 Laws of Power. Politicians
are
each other's reputation every day.
Absolutely.
They employ that tactic. And so that's the premise of this book. It's not designed to corrupt anybody. However, again, you got to think about it. Knowledge, you know, you can use it for corruption or you can use it for the common good. And that's with any knowledge that you gain, not just the 48 Laws of Power. I mean, and I'm not to compare it to the Bible. You know, a lot of people say they can't relate to the Bible because of the time frame. But those are real people. You know, B.C., there were still real people during the Bible, you know, in the law. You know, Jesus came on the scene. He did his miracles. Those are people. So I think a lot of times people just, my personal opinion, people just look for excuses to not understand things.
Right.
But when you just have to really open your mind, you know, when you close your mind, you close yourself off from growth and broadening your horizons and your learning and your experiences. But when you're open to learn new things, you can then begin to grow. And the same for the Bible, which is the Word of God, because a lot of tough stuff you read in there, you can't understand. But do you not read it? Do you not learn about it? Do you not want to know what happened? You want to know these things. So 48 Laws of Power, I think, serves many purposes, first of all, because it gives you history. So if you missed history in school, read Before They Lost Power, you'll get it.
You'll get it.
You're going to get a history lesson. You will get it. And on top of that, you're going to get from the 48 Laws of Power, I have gotten in terms of soft skills. Those are the skills that most people don't see. In terms of my soft skills, I think I've learned more from reading the 48 Laws of Power than I learned being a student in the School of Business and Industry at Florida A&M University.
Oh, wow. That says a lot. Wow. Wow. Having read the book, I know exactly where you're coming from, but that says a lot. Well, you know, TK, as usual, you've done a great job navigating through a tricky law, and we certainly look forward to law number 6 sometime early next month. We'll be advertising that out for you guys who are following along. But, TK, can you let everybody know, if you would, how they can follow you when you're not hanging out on the conversation?
Okay, yes. They can follow me at www.TanyaKilpatrick.com. That is my personal website. They can also follow me on Facebook, where I share moments or tips to enhance or increase your millionaire mindset, and I'm at www.facebook.com/TanyaCKilpatrick. Yeah, make sure you put that C in there. And I'm also on Twitter, just Tanya Kilpatrick on Twitter. And as always, Clark, it's always a pleasure sharing with you and chatting with you here on Blog Talk Radio.
Man, it's been a pleasing plum pleasure, as a good friend of mine always says. And listen, I hope you guys listening feel just a smidgen more smarter for having listened to the show. We're going to be right back with author Melissa Brathwaite. And listen, guys, you're listening to The Conversation.
If you have elementary age kids, boy, do I have a book for them to read. It's called Dana the Procrastinator. Dana is an 8-year-old boy who loves to waste time, but his procrastination catches up with him when he realizes that he missed out on his own surprise. Well, I can't tell you. Anyway, check out this book at www.kidsread.com. That's www.kidsread.com and available on Amazon.com. You're going to love the illustrations and the audio-video CD-ROM, Dana the Procrastinator.
Regulators. You regulate any stealing of his property. We're damn good, too. But you can't be any geek off the street. Gotta be handy with the steel, if you know what I mean. Earn your keep.
Regulators! Mount up!
It was a clear black night, a clear white moon. Warmer G was on the streets, trying to consume some search for the E, so I could get some phones. Rolling in my ride, chilling all alone.
Just hit the east side of the LBC, on a mission trying to find Mr. Warren G. Seen a car full of girls, ain't no need to tweak. All of you search, know what's up with 213.
So I hooked the left on 21 and Lewis, some brothers shooting dice, so I said, let's do this. I jumped out the rock and said, what's up? Some brothers pulled some heat, so I said, I'm stuck.
These girls peeping me, I'm on glide and swerve. These hoops looking so hard, they straight hit the curve. Want to bigger, better things than some horny tricks. I see my homie and some suckers all in his mix.
I'm getting jacked, I'm breaking myself. I can't believe they taking Warren's wealth. They took my rings, they took my Rolex. I looked at the brother, said, damn, what's next?
They got my homie hemmed up, and they all around. Can't none of them see him if they going straight down for pound. They want to come up real quick before they start to clown. I best pull out my and lay them busters down.
They got guns to my head, I think I'm going down. I can't believe it's happening in my own town.
If I had wings, I would fly, let me contemplate. I glance in the cut, and I see my homie Nate.
16 in the and one in the hole. Nate Dogg is about to make somebody turn. Now they dropping and yelling, it's a tad bit late. Nate Dogg and Warren G had to regulate.
N-A-T-E-N-E, the woman to the G.
Just like I thought, they were in the same spot, in need of some.
as hell. I said, ooh, I like your side. She said my chords broke down and just sing real nice. Would you let me ride? I got a car full of girls and it's going real swell. The next stop is the East Side Motel.
Hey, you know what? We're back. Philippians 4:13. I can do all things through Christ, which strengthens me. It is this very verse that explains our next guest's strength, drive, and determination that ensures that this generation not be lost to statistics and negative mindsets. In 2008, our guest embarked on one of her most profound experiences when she visited Nigeria. It was during this trip that she realized how she was going to fill that void. It was also during this time in Nigeria that 8 Steps to a New You was born. So without further ado, please welcome to the show our special guest today, Miss Melissa Brathwaite. Melissa, are you there?
I am here. Thank you so much.
No,
I am here.
Thank you.
I am really excited. Well, thank
well,
you for having me.
I've been trying to get you on for a while. Oh, no problem. No problem. Not a problem at all. Listen, we're excited to talk about your book that came out, I guess, sometime last year, or you'll tell us more about that in a minute. But,
yeah.
Melissa, first I want to talk about you began your journey teaching kids with autism, as I read. Tell us, what did that experience teach you?
Wow, and as a behavioral specialist working in Mount Clear for 8 years, as well as going to their homes and doing personal therapy for these children, it taught me so much of how, no matter who you are, what child you have, every person is important. They are special no matter what their circumstances may be. This actually taught me a lot of patience, to be honest with you. Working with children with autism, you know, they can't speak. Because they can't speak, their behavioral tendencies is very high, meaning of, you know, biting, you know, throwing things. So it really teaches you a lot of patience and how to deal with children of all different on the behavioral spectrum aspect. It really gave me a full understanding of these children and how, you know, their actual world is. It's a different world for them. So it really brought me into their world for me to understand who they are and really cater to their needs and meet them where they are and understand that no matter how, you know, classified they are still one of God's. So I have to treat them, not what people classify them as, but treat them as they are a typical child but have a little extra, they just need an extra assistant with my help. So I enjoyed each and every moment with my children, you know, really gearing them to become a better students, you know, in their classroom. Let the other students realize that no matter how different this person is, they're still similar, just like you, but just need a little help. So I this experience alone teaching children with autism really brought me a good understanding of how they are, good understanding of just being patient and understand that no matter what, Melissa, don't get angry. Just understand these children have their own little world, and I just have to jump into their world and find out what's going on with them.
Wow. Now, that's powerful. And you also began teaching anger management classes for parents with at-risk kids, which has to be awfully challenging in and of itself. What was the basis for the most of, in your opinion, most of the parents' anger that you discovered in most cases?
Okay. To me, it came back. It started from childhood. A lot of these parents had problems that was it was brushed underneath the bed. And as they grew older, the problem began to grow, and no one talked about it. No one dealt with it. So they kept on throwing something on that, and more as they grow, some other problems came about, and they kept on, it's like you're adding dirt on top of dirt on top of dirt until one moment in your life you begin to explode. That's like a volcano, and you know there is they see red, meaning nothing else matter but what, you know, how they feel right now, which is angry. So to me, what the cause of most of these parents' anger stem from their past history of their childhood, of being molested, of being abused, being verbally and physically abused. And because of that area of their life, you know, they then got into a relationship with other males that did the same thing. So it was like a generational cycle that was not broken. But when they came into my class, I really tap into them and let them realize it's not what you just did, it's what happened to you when you were five. Happened to you when you were seven. You know, so I brought my clients back, and one of the biggest thing was unforgiveness. Because of the unforgiveness as a child of who molested them, who abandoned them, or who never really gave them attention, because of all that other aspect, they passed that same cycle onto their children, which brought them, you know, from into my class, because I dealt with children and their parents that were taken from, you know, through the system, you know. So it was that cycle that brought them into that room with me. So I really opened their mind to understand what was it that caused you not to be here, but what caused you to be angry all these years. And let's deal with that problem. So when we can find out that problem, we can then come to a solution. And the solution is unforgiveness. Once you reach that barrier and you break that wall down, then we can start on working on where we are now. And that's how that's what brought me to that moment.
Well, Melissa, I want to ask you, did both of these experiences form your basic foundation for much of the work that you're doing today?
Yes. I felt that when my clients came in for 13 weeks, they left with nothing. They left with nothing in the sense of intangibility of something they can say, I can have at home. I can literally have a system set in place for me to not go backward, but continue to go forward. So I had to put together, I pray to God and ask God, what can I do to make a change? Not just have somebody come in and go out, but have someone have my CD in their ears over and over, my book in their face, and having them journal their self and really going through a process of transformation. And that's what brought me to my book, my not-for-profit organization, a way for me to really tap into their mindset, to really move them into transformation aspect of, you know, their lives, so we can really see how we can get rid of these unbroken cycles. You know, so yes, these situations that the different clients that I saw in my as a facilitator for anger management and parental skill classes, plus my play therapy I was doing with their children, caused me to really go deeper into my not-for-profit organization, go deeper in creating a book and CDs and different things to have them to have tangibly at home to utilize on a daily, weekly, monthly basis.
You know, it's the passion that I hear in your voice now. It's one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on to talk about the things that your journey and the things you've done and also your book. So, again, I want to thank you for coming on. I believe you are helping so many people deal with problems that, as you said before, are just being brushed under the rug, and it is making for a more difficult and more challenging community and society that we live in. Now, I want to switch gears. Many of my friends have told me, just harking back to what your experience has been, that their first travel to Africa moved them in ways they never thought it would. What was your experience when you went to Nigeria?
Oh, my first travel to Africa was when I went to Ghana. I've been to Africa about four times now, and will be marrying a Nigerian very soon. But my first experience in Ghana was when I went to visit the they have two different castles where the slaves were traded. I wanted to find out about my heritage. I'm originally from Jamaica, and I really wanted to find out a little bit more about where I came from, where my people came from. So that brought me back to Ghana, where I explore the different castles and really understand how our people really came about from what part of, where different part of Africa to the actual Caribbean to America. And the experience blew my mind so much that I decided at that time in 2001 when I went to Ghana, I decided that I wanted to build a house and do business there. The experience was unbelievable. The people were just awesome. The food, the everything was just amazing. And the knowledge that was shared about, you know, our heritage, where I found out that Jamaicans and Haitians are from the Nigeria, from Nigeria, West Africa. And, you know, which when you think about it, when I looked into my heritage, I realized a lot of the Jamaican culture really stemmed from Nigeria, you know. So it really brought me closer to the Nigerian, Nigerian people and the culture. And that's what brought me back there again in 2004, I believe. I went there in 2007 and 2008, you know. So it just... From then on, I decided that, hey, why not just marry into a Nigerian, into the culture,
right,
and just, you know, enjoy it. But my experience experience there was really awesome.
That is awesome. Ghana, speaking of Ghana, they just recently discovered oil there, and so that's being already exploited by the Asian world. And And they are also number one producers of palm oil, which is something I just recently found out. I'm actually part of a nonprofit organization, Bridging the African Divide, and we've been really hard pressed to affect the African diaspora and getting that, I guess you would call it, uniting that bond, that natural bond that is out there, but it's just been so disconnected over the years. So I salute you for gaining your Nigerian, I guess regaining your Nigerian status. We'll call it that. It's just been on hold for a couple hundred years, but you've regained
it.
That's a pleasure in and of itself.
Yeah.
Your book, 8 Steps to a New You. Tell us how did this book come about?
Actually, I was going through the process of transition at a very young age, you know, being divorced and going through different, you know, emotional barriers and, you know, financial difficulties, and just a lot of changes, and really brought my self-esteem to a very low point in my life. And I just, like, when I went to Nigeria in 2008, I just needed to go away. And just, I went around the Christmas season, where at that time in their culture, they go back to their villages. So I went to a Pacific village, and I stayed there for about 2.5 weeks, and I just meditated on God and just, you know, was asking God, why am I here? What is my purpose? I am not living my purpose working for others. I'm not doing what I'm called to do. And I just really thought about all the experience I've went through and what's going to make me stronger. And these 8 steps came out. And I said, if I can allow these 8 steps to really transform my life and allow me to become a better and bolder person, if I can do that for myself, why not help others do so? So I really kind of geared myself in 2008, end of 2008, going into 2009, and I literally activated those 8 steps. And I saw myself transform into a better, bolder, wonderful woman, accepting me all areas of my life, in my finance, in my relationship, in my physical aspect, in my spiritual aspect. I accepted me, and I actually learned to understand who Melissa was, and those 8 steps became me. So then I decided to say, why not just go forth in a book? And I call my book not a reading book, but a doing book. Because my book is not for you to just read on, because a lot of people read books, but they don't really take in what they're reading. Just read for just for sake, you know. I don't like just reading books. I like doing books, because when you activate something is when you're doing something. So I had to really change my book around to be a very active book, where you have to write down your purpose, write down about, you know, why you're here, understand your goals and your objective in life. Those are the things that you need to know to become a better you. So to answer your question, this really started with me. I had to be transformed. Melissa had to start first, these 8 steps. And then I was able to release this book for others to be transformed.
Well, Melissa, without giving too much information, we want to give them just a little kernel of nuggets. Can you talk a little bit about maybe one or two key steps in your book that we really need to focus on? I mean, I know all eight are powerful in and of themselves, but we don't want to give them everything right now. We just want to give them a teaser so they can go out and buy the book and go out and contact you. But what are some key steps that the book is going to teach them?
I love all my steps, but one of the steps that really have allowed me to activate me is knowing my purpose. That is the seventh step to becoming a better you. Knowing your purpose. Your purpose is your map to a better you. Once you understand your purpose, why am I created? Am I created to serve others? Am I created to save? Or am I created to, what am I created to do? Am I created to just write a book and to be a motivational speaker, to help others? What am I created to do? What is that? How is this going to help me to have that roadmap to my success and to really live out why God really wants me to be here? So this knowing your purpose is one of the keys that will really activate the God in you, to activate why the Creator created you, and to allow you to really then move into your destiny where you can then start changing not your life but others. I believe we're born to serve, not to serve the master. Your jobs and your bosses and stuff. You're born to serve and help others, because the more people you help and serve, the more you will be blessed and more doors will be open unto you. And you will never lack for nothing. Once you begin to walk into your purpose, you never begin to lack for nothing, because you're doing what God has truly created you to do. So if I can lead any steps, one of the steps with anybody is to really sit down tonight, look in the mirror, just look at yourself, and really just say, oh, my gosh, Melissa, why are you here? Why was you created? I was born October 22nd, 1981. For what reason? And that day is a specific day. Why that day? Just go over the different things about you. I've done this. I've done that. Just look at the actual, timeline of your different jobs that you've done, and really begin to figure out a map to your end result. And then say to yourself, okay, let me sit and just sleep on this and pray on this and see if this is where my purpose, is this truly my purpose, and if this is where God want me to begin, start in my destiny. And once you have found out that purpose, activate it. And I guarantee you, once you begin to activate your purpose, they haven't seen anything yet. Just like Oprah began her own show, our own TV station, yours. Own your purpose so you can then become that Oprah, become that Bill Gates, where the wealth of everything is later for you. So I hope I've left that. That's what I will leave. One of those, I love the steps, all steps, but that step right there is what I'm activating now this day. I'm truly walking in my purpose. Truly, I am.
I want to just give a little shout out to all those Debbie Downers out there listening. And I got to ask you, what advice can you give someone listening to the show who says it's too late? It's too late to start over. And what's the use? I'm always going to be who I am right now.
I would say reprogram yourself and understand that, yes, you can. Just like our president, yes, I can. Yes, you can. You can be 100 years old, but you know what? That's the day you can say, I was born. Your dream was born on a just if it's now I'm gonna be 30 this year. If my dream was born right now, March 30th, I begin my day today. The old things have been passed away. Now you're become a new person, a new start. Reprogram yourself and say, you know what? I've done that. Leave the old things in the past. Forget all those things, and let's press forward to those things which I know that will serve me today and change my life forever. It's never, never too late. All you have to do is say, you know what? I'm ready. Not tomorrow, but I'm ready now to begin to transform the me so I can live forth my purpose and become a better and bolder me.
Powerful. So, Melissa, what's coming up in 2011 for you? I know you got some big things.
Oh, my God.
And a lot of people to affect.
Yes. I start my tour. My pre-tour will begin in April, on April the 16th in West Virginia. I will we'll be pushing Eight Steps to New You in different states. I start in April, and I resume again in June all the way to the end of the year. But in that process, I am going to release three more books. Two of my books is complete. I just have to send them to publish and getting everything started. But I'm really going to be, you know, releasing them within the middle of my tour, which is around September. So I should be having about before the end of the year, I would like to release three or maybe the fourth book. I'm not sure. I may leave that fourth book till 2012. But I will be doing tours every month in different states. You can email me, and I can definitely let you know if that's the state I'm going to be in. My manager has me on tour every month. I'm going to speak in about this, Eight Steps to New You, doing some coaching session, and really just uplifting and bringing forth people to understand the better and bolder person in them. And my other books are really around that same releasing the power in you. Open up your mouth and speak what is possible. Nothing is impossible. All you have to do is speak the positive. So I'm going to go across the United States and share that information and go back to Nigeria by the end of the year and to do some business there to release some of these books, start that one of the books tour around the Nigerian market at the end of the year to go into 2012. So looking to go international. I'm doing the book tour, in October. There is the world's largest book fair in Germany. I'm looking to go there. Last year I missed it, but I did the United States largest book fair last year. I was featured in that book fair, and this year I want to do the world's largest in October. So my hope is to be in Germany in October. If not myself, but the book, I will definitely want to have one or two of the books in the largest book fair in the world. So, so much to do, and, you know, so much to do. You know, I wanted to accomplish some of these things before I'm 30. So October 22nd, make my 30th birthday, and I decided that that's my goal to accomplish, you know, finishing up some of my books and releasing and, you know, doing some other business that I have to really take care of, which is opening up the world for all women. I'm going to really release a lot of stuff for ladies come 2012. So it is a lot to do. I'm telling you, I have to change. My goal is 1 million ladies within the next 2 years. So I have a lot to do.
That is powerful. You know what, Melissa, you got to come back. Hopefully you come into Atlanta during your book tour.
Yes, I would love, love, love to come to Atlanta. Yes.
Well, you be sure to let me know. Keep me in touch. And definitely, once your other books have come out, I want you to come back on the show. I love your energy. I love your karma. And you're definitely talking about things that are going to impact our communities. And we need it now more than ever. People don't think they do, but we need it more than ever right now. Before I let you go, it's a little tradition on the show. We have six questions I ask all of our guests. One word answers. You mind if I ask these questions to you?
Oh, please do. Please do.
This is fun time. So it's, you know, no pressure. What is your favorite word, Melissa?
My favorite word is but God.
What is your least favorite word?
No.
What person or event affected your life the most?
On November the 5th of last year, when I went to a convention, this man of God affected my life and has really transformed my 2011 move now.
Wow.
Wow. What's the last book you read?
The last book I read, I just finished this book. I love this book. I read about 12 times. The 12 Universal Laws of Success.
Mm. Yeah, that is a good one. What profession other than your own would you like to try?
I would like to try being a lawyer.
Crazy, I just love being a lawyer. A very passionate one at that. Absolutely. We don't know. You know, that might be your third life. We'll work that.
Yes.
Hey, and last but not least, if heaven exists, what would you like to have God say to you as you arrive at the pearly gates?
Well done, my good and faithful servant. You have done me well.
Man, I always love to hear that. Well, you know what? As time flies, always when you have powerful people on this show, I want you to, before you go, tell everyone how they can buy your book, and you guys need to get out today on the internet and get this book. How can they get the book, and how can they follow you as you tour the United States?
You can call anytime, 24 hours, 7 days a week, 888-795-4274. Again, 888-795-4274, extension 7876. Or you can visit my website at www.8steps2anewyou.com. You can always follow me on Facebook as Melissa Wayoma Brathwaite, or you can just put the book, 8 Steps to a New You, in, and it will pull me up. Or you can email me so you can know where we're going to be traveling. Very soon you will see the tour list on the website, but you can email me again at 8 Steps to a New You at gmail.com.
Perfect. Perfect. Melissa, I hope you have fun. We definitely enjoyed you being
yes,
on
I
the
did.
Show.
Thank
cool.
you.
Cool. Any last words you want to give us or any nuggets?
The last word I want you to let everyone know is just understand that your purpose has not been served yet. Go out, get started, and move forward and change as many people's lives as possible. Yes, you can. You can do all things through Christ, which strengthens you. And yes, the 8 Steps to a New You will really transform your life.
Well, there you have it. Ladies and gentlemen, we enjoyed her so much. Let's give her a round of applause.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
I really appreciate it.
it was our pleasure. Hey, guys, you know what? We like to always give you something positive, something strong. Wasn't Melissa just the bomb? Yeah, I'm going to have her back. I got to get her back. That was powerful. I love what she's doing. I want to thank all of our guests tonight. The fabulous Coach TK and also Melissa Brathwaite. And I'm going to give a shout-out to my girl, Deidre Fabray, for her front-page article in the Atlanta Constitution Journal today. Check her out, featuring her new company, LP is the New Fine. Big ups to a powerful nonprofit organization, Bridging the African Divide. Big ups to you guys. Also, much love to my brothers of Kappa Alpha Psi, Nukes in the House. Yeah, I had to go there. Hey, but last but not least, big thanks to the boss, Jerry Smith. This Sunday, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, our guest will be Miss Irene Freeman, discussing how you can get back to an A credit rating. Yeah, I'm talking about you. But let's remember, if you live life casually, you'll end up certainly a casualty. That's all we got. I gotta go do P90X. I'm out.